Well, the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. And the faker's gonna fake, 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 baby. I'm just gonna make, 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 make. Making luck, making luck.
A Dominion Podcast.
Welcome back to Making Luck, a Dominion Podcast. Wandering Winder talking about, well, continuing a bit on our discussion from last week, where, among other things, we talked about safe plays and how that concept might be misleading at times and might end up causing bad outcomes. Today I want to talk about the flip side, which is risky plays, and how that concept might at times mislead you into making poor decisions. So what is a risky play? So this is kind of the first point, which is, well, I think that risky plays in general, when people say something is risky, they mean that if it doesn't work out, depending on maybe on the draws, maybe on something else, if it doesn't work out, there's the potential for it to be like extra bad than, you know, compared to just a quote unquote normal alternative. So that is going to be something that's around with a risky play, but in some cases, there's like no potential reward for taking the risky quote-unquote play. And if there's no potential reward, I wouldn't actually call it risky. I would just call it bad, right? Like buying a curse on turn one, it's not really a risky play. It's just a bad play. There's no upside to having the curse, or there's certainly not enough upside to make it better than whatever alternative. So basically, it's just a bad play, right? Somebody's going to edge case me, and that's fine. Leave your edge case in the comments. So that's one thing. That's not really a risky play. That's just a bad play. But most of the time, there's at least some potential reward, right? You get some benefit if it works out well for you. You know, I open double fortune teller because, you know, if they don't collide, then the attack is a thing, and they have a four-card hand because there's a bad card on their deck, so there's some benefit, right? Now that's like a pretty bad risk to take in almost every circumstance, but okay, right? You could see the risk there is that they collide and you end up having less money, and the reward is that you get this little piddly fortune teller attack, right? So there's a risk and a reward. And people are generally risk averse for a lot of reasons, which gets into philosophy and psychology I don't really want to go into in broader life. But in Dominion, what I want to talk about is that kind of the feeling that one thing is a risk and the other thing is not is a little bit of a myth, at least in some circumstances, to where, yes, it's a risk if you take the double fortune teller, but it's also a risk if you don't. Now, in the case of double fortune teller, like the risk of double fortune teller isn't worth it because the reward is so tiny. But we can see that the risk if you don't take the double fortune teller is that you don't attack as much. You risk not attacking as much, and that you're not hurting your opponent as much. So that's like a stupid example, because very rarely are you going to consider opening double fortune teller. But you can see that, right, if I get the perfect draws where my fortune tellers never collide, then it was better for me to open double fortune teller, asterisk, asterisk, sometimes the fortune teller attack is actually helpful, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, right, that paints the concept, right? It's on the flip side of a risk, and I'm going to call this WW's third law of risks in Dominion, which is for every risk, there is an opposite, not equal and opposite, but an opposite counter risk. And I'd kind of like to call that opportunity risk, right? Where the risk that you're taking by not going for the quote-unquote risky plan is you're risking not getting the reward. So in a very broad sense, in general, in a lot of cases, say at the start of the game, what you're risking is that your opponent goes for the risky line and it pays off for them, the bad thing doesn't happen, and so then they're ahead, and you're behind, and so in this case, you've lost that risk, right? This is a bad thing that's happened to you, your opponent has gone for the risky play, and you're behind because of it. What it really comes down to is you have to again, following on from the having a plan next week, you have to see how going for the risk in the good, how likely is the good case, how likely is the bad case, and in each of those cases, how much does that affect your winning chances, the good case or the bad case. So this is pretty abstract right now. Let's get into a little bit more concrete. And I guess staying on the abstract for just a moment more, there is, at any given point in time, your expected win rate. Now, this is kind of an artificial construct. I mean, it's a real thing. If both players play perfectly, what is your expected win rate based on the draws? That is a real thing, which is a number which exists. But I say it's artificial because you virtually never can know what that number is. You know, with some exceptions of, you know, it's the end of the game or something. But I think figuring out how this affects my chances to win the game as opposed to some other thing is sometimes a useful artificial construct, right? In some other cases besides, you know, it's a forced win or a forced loss, you can maybe not figure out your exact chances to win the game, but still figure out that something helps your chances more than another thing, right? So if it's getting close to the end of the game and you can more or less tell that all that matters is getting the last province, then you can figure out that, sure, getting this duchy might score me more points, but it's never going to affect the outcome of the game, so it actually doesn't increase my chances of winning the game, right? Or if all that matters is getting the last province, then something which is going to help me get other points somehow, but those points won't make a difference, isn't going to matter. Or maybe you buy something or stack your deck in such a way that's maybe quote-unquote bad for a long-term game, but you're not playing a long-term game, you're just playing to maximize your chances of getting a province before your opponent. So in those kinds of ways, thinking about, does this actually help me win the game as opposed to some more normal, the game is going long heuristic and I can't tell how this will affect my chances of winning the game, which might be a normal heuristic that you play for much of the game on, in some cases directly being able to think about, okay, but does this actually help my chances to win the game is more useful. Now, I don't want to say all of your decisions should be based on, does this give me a better percentage chance to win the game? Strictly speaking, that's true. But because it's an artificial construct that's more or less impossible to calculate in most situations, other heuristics are still helpful. I'm not trying to say that they're not. But let's look at some more concrete kind of examples. So opening double terminal, right? We looked at it with Fortune Teller, where basically the Fortune Teller attack is so tiny that the extra money is almost always going to be better. But maybe it's not always so clear, right? Maybe there's some cargo ship is a cheap terminal that I might want to open two of, right? And I can't open two of. Do I want to open cargo ship, or do I want to open cargo ship silver? Obviously, there's going to be other options that you need to consider as well, but simplifying it down a little bit here. And yeah, there's pros and cons. Cargo ship makes it more likely that you're going to get a cargo ship turn three. So people would generally say that the double cargo ship is the risky play, but I want to show that both plays have various risks and various rewards, right? So double cargo ship, I'm going to be more likely to get my cargo ship in play in turn three, which is going to make me somewhat more likely to get a big turn four. I'm going to be more likely to play a five cost on turn four. I'm going to be more likely to play a six cost on turn four. I'm going to be more likely to be able to buy a six cost on turn four. Right, all of these things are true, but also you have to look at, okay, I'm going to be less likely to get a five cost overall. Maybe, actually, I need to check that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm going to be less likely to get kind of particular values worth of cards in my deck, because there is this chance of collision, and if they collide, it's kind of a molten disaster for me, right? If they collide on turn four or later, especially, it's kind of a disaster for me. So if they collide on turn three, maybe I can still get a five or a six because I can, you know, buy a silver and have it in my hand and have an okay hand on turn four. But so this is an oversimplified version. In some cases, that risk is going to be worth it. In some cases, it's not. But in all cases, what you want to look at is, okay, not only am I risking them colliding, but I'm also risking, if I go for a cargo ship silver instead, I'm risking that I won't get the good case that I might have otherwise gotten. And so it's very easy in this situation to say my opponent's going to go for double cargo ship, and they're going to, you know, I'm risking them hitting cargo ship on turn three, which lets them, you know, get a silver or gold into their hand on turn four, which lets them get another gold on turn four, or, okay, silver or gold's probably not really the options that they're going to go for, but, you know, this oversimplified example where a cargo ship's the only card in the kingdom, but, you know, there's fours or fives or whatever they could get in turn four. I'm risking them having an increased chance at that and getting, like, two fives or two sixes or something, right? They have the chance of playing, increased chance of playing a five on turn three, an increased chance of getting sixes and getting a ton of value. But they also have an increased chance of complete molten disaster from a collision on turn four or something, right? So there's risks on both sides, right? You're risking that your opponent gets this really good example, really good case where they don't collide. You're risking that if you don't go for the double cargo ship, but if you do go for the cargo ship, you're risking that they do collide. So it's risks both ways. And this is kind of my main point, is that what I might call Wandering Winder's third law, WW's third law of risks, third law of riskiness, in Dominion in particular, which is for every risk, there is an opposite counter risk, right? We might call that opportunity risk. It's not equal and opposite, certainly, and this is part of what makes Dominion interesting and you know, a nice game to play, is trying to weigh, you know, which risk is bigger, or, you know, if the payoff of one thing versus the risk is more valuable than the payoff of the other thing versus the risk. So in the cargo ship example, I really don't know. I think it depends on, you know, the board and the situation, and some people might say it even depends on whether you're player one or player two, which is true in some cases, although I think that's tends to be a little bit overblown. Regardless, we can see that there's risks on both sides, and you have to weigh, you know, okay, what is the chances that they collide versus what upside do I get, you know, and how bad is that for me versus what are the chances they don't collide and what is the upside of that? And in some cases, okay, you're not playing the same deck, you're not in the same situation as your opponent, so there isn't going to be this direct kind of counter threat that you can see of, well, what if they do the other thing, and, you know, there's going to be some chance that the draws work out well for them, and then I'm just behind. In some cases, there isn't that direct counter example because you're not in the same situation. So, okay, maybe it's not quite as easy to see. I'm risking my opponent going for the thing that I'm not going for and coming out ahead. In some cases, you have a kind of a theoretical risk of, you know, if the draws worked out differently, maybe they draw really well and I end up, or I would have drawn really well and I end up behind from where I would have been otherwise. And so that's some theoretical risk which you will never know, but in terms of how it affects you win the game or not, right, you are limiting your upside, you're limiting your ceiling by not quote-unquote taking the risk. So this is all very related to opportunity cost. So right, taking this quote unquote safe play is usually going to entail some kind of opportunity cost, where you're not getting as high of a ceiling as you otherwise would. Your best case, you're chopping off the top of the best case, and in some cases that's a bad thing because you need to be able to take that best case in order to be able to get ahead far enough to win the game, or to get ahead as much as you could be to have a better chance of winning the game, right? So, right, there's the direct risk, you might say, of your terminals colliding and the indirect risk of your terminals wouldn't have collided in your behind. In the terminal case, not only for cargo ship but for other things, right? You one risk that risk one potentially bad thing that you might do in looking at it totally this way is to cut off your calculations at some point. So right, I could do all this cargo ship stuff and only look at turn three, turn four, but the big reason why I think you most of the time you don't want to you don't want a double cargo ship. The reason you don't want a double cargo ship is because that's two terminals, and even if they're unlikely to collide on turn three and four, and they are unlikely to collide on turn three and four, the game isn't going to end after turn four. And down the road, maybe I want to add even more terminals. Down the road, I'm going to probably have some kind of a terminal collision. And when that happens, that might be painful enough that it's not worth getting the cargo ship now, even though maybe a third of my chance of collision in the game is going to come to pass on turns three and four. But over the course of the game, not only do I have the risk that I get them to collide early and I'm way behind, but I also have some additional downsides later on of them being able to collide. But this is where it really matters kind of what you're looking at in the longer term. And if your actions are going to be plentiful and terminal space won't be an issue down the stretch, going longer, then you only have these terminals. Maybe, you know, getting a bunch more villages is quote-unquote free, such that your terminal space isn't going to be a limiting factor. And in that case, the risk is more acceptable because it's only the short term that you're really worried about collision. And the counter risk, the opportunity risk of not getting your big turn three and four by delaying seeing your cargo ship or getting cargo ships on both of those turns, becomes relatively larger. And it's not that it's relatively larger because it's actually larger. It's relatively larger because the downside of opening with the two terminals is mitigated by what you're planning on doing later on. So, okay, this is one example we can look at with terminals. Maybe a more direct example is, like, my opponent might attack me, so I need to get this defense. So a lighthouse or a moat, or I'm going to look at Guardian because it's probably the starkest example here. My opponents might play this big attack on me. I'm going to buy a Guardian because I don't want to risk them attacking me and that really hurting me. So I'm going to get a Guardian instead, and I'm going to be defended. Well, you're defending against the risk of your opponent attacking you, so great. But you're also making a risk of not loading up on your own game plan, right? So sure, your opponent might attack you, but chances are that Guardian was not the best card for your deck propelling your own game plan, right? So you're risking not doing anything, basically, if you get the Guardian. Now, again, maybe that's a good thing to do in this situation because the attack is so devastating and you're not really doing nothing with the Guardian, right? You're propelling yourself only a tiny amount, but maybe you're far enough ahead or doing enough other good things that you don't need to propel yourself by a lot. You just need to mitigate the downside of whatever devastating attack they're gonna smush you with, right? So it might be good that you're actually taking that Guardian, but it might also be bad, right? Like, probably if you're just, like, buying Guardian every turn from turn three because, oh my god, they have an attack now, maybe they play it on me, or from turn two if you're player two, right? And you're just buying a Guardian every turn, like, there is no attack, I don't think, that's devastating enough to make that kind of worth it. Again, edge case me. Feel free to leave an edge case in the comments where you want to buy Guardian every turn from turn two. But basically, my point is, at some point you're going to say, I'm going to open myself up to an attack, and yeah, if they hit me, they hit me. But I need to be able to propel my own game plan more than just buying a Guardian every turn because it doesn't propel me much. So it's risky in that I'm opening myself up for an attack, but the opposite risk, quote-unquote, of not doing anything is going to be bigger in a lot of cases, just a lot of cases, that alternative opportunity risk is going to be just much more damaging. So you really have to weigh how likely are they to attack me, how devastating is the attack, how much am I actually getting ahead if I do get the Guardian versus, you know, if they don't attack me, how much worse is the Guardian than the alternative? And in some cases, it's going to be worth it, and in some cases, it's not. You have to read not only the board, but your position, how likely they are to attack you, how good that is, what you're doing on the opposite side, whatever. It's a similar thing with Young Witch and the Bane in a lot of cases, right? Young Witch, do you want to load up on the Bane? If it's not an optimal card, you risk them Young Witching you. But if you load up on the suboptimal card, then they don't go for Young Witch, and they just go for the optimal card, and they're ahead. So, like, you're behind that way, too, potentially. Basically, if you're scared of Young Witch, you need to be able to punish not getting the Bane by getting Young Witch, and if you can't punish that, then you shouldn't really be scared of Young Witch. But also, you really need to look at what your opponent's doing to figure out how scared of Young Witch you need to be, right? If it's only that they might get a Young Witch, then that's going to affect, versus if they have gotten a Young Witch, right? And, well, the quality of the Bane versus the quality of the alternative cards that you're getting, right? If the Bane is Fishing Village, and otherwise you would be getting a silver because the village isn't super important to you early on and you'd like to have a slightly better chance of hitting five or whatever, right? Fishing Village is not that much worse than silver, so it's a pretty minor downside to be able to get the Fishing Village, right? Still, you want to time it maybe based on how likely your opponent is to be able to get Young Witcher or whatnot or what have you. Yeah, so again, we can see in this situation, it's a risk to get the silver because you might not be defended against a Young Witch, but there's also the counter risk of getting the Fishing Village of you're slightly less likely to hit the five that you really want. So again, you have to play this risk-reward game and how bad is getting hit by Young Witch and how likely is that and how much do your chances actually of hitting five actually drop and all of that kind of stuff. So there's risks on both sides. There's the direct risk that you might think of as being risky, and then there's the opportunity of being the opportunity risk of not doing the best thing that you could do there. Putting this aside for a second, I don't want to just bash on the whole risky thought totally. Again, sometimes there's situations where there isn't actually a risk. I think in Dominion, most decisions probably aren't risky at all, but most interesting decisions are. So all the stuff we've talked about now, it's not just prima facie clear. This thing is better than the other thing. So there's some risks because I could draw well or I could draw poorly, and weighing those is kind of what makes the game interesting, the risk versus reward. But there's a ton of decisions that you don't think about that are just kind of obvious, and there's not real risk, and it's like I talked about at the beginning, it's just good or it's just bad. So, right, turn one, I could buy silver or I could buy copper. Like, buying silver is just better than buying copper. Again, there's edge cases at me in the comments. But most of the time, buying silver is just better than buying copper. And so, right, it's not really a risk to buy the copper, it's just bad. Buying silver is usually better than buying nothing. Again, there's going to be potential exceptions to this rule, edge cases, you might say. And so, yeah, sometimes you don't buy the silver, but on turn one especially, you're usually going to buy that silver. Silver's usually better than buying a state. A state's usually worse than buying nothing. Curse is usually worse than buying nothing. Like, all of these things, okay, maybe we can't quantify exactly what the effect is on win percentage, But in a lot of these cases, we can still be confident that maybe not that like buying the silver is quote unquote correct, but that buying the curse or the estate or the copper is incorrect. And maybe we can't like mathematically prove whatever exactly the difference on the win rate, but we can be pretty confident that it is incorrect to buy copper over silver on turn one. You know, again, in the vast majority of cases, there's going to be some exceptions. And we can be pretty confident in a huge amount of cases that, you know, buying silver is better than buying nothing on turn one. Again, there's going to be some exceptions. It's not, like, strictly speaking, proven. But in a lot of cases, we can just be very confident of that. Okay, so there's that. But there's also something to this idea of risk in another sense that has to do with variance. And so in some cases, what people think of as a risky play is like a higher variance play. And I think that tracks with other scenarios. And in some cases, it tracks in Dominion as well. Variance is a well-defined mathematical concept, and people don't usually mean it to exactly coincide with that concept. But in general, they follow along more or less similar lines, right? You have some metric. And this is the part where people don't think about when they're talking about variance. Some metric, and there's more variation in it, you're going to have higher variance. So in Dominion, what people are usually thinking about is like, how well does my deck function, which is not a metric that's easy to define, let alone measure. You could probably do it, and if I were trying to hand code up an AI, I could probably code up some reasonable approximation for how well does my deck measure in terms of what its expected output is on a given turn, but okay, even that's not so clear, and it's only going to be an approximation of that metric and all of that. So that's a metric that you might want to use, and there could be variations in outcomes on a turn, right? If I open double terminal, there's higher highs when they don't collide, and there's lower lows when they do collide, so the variance is higher. There's, you know, adding more stuff to my deck such that it makes it riskier that I might have a dud. I'm increasing my dud chances, but in the cases where I don't have a dud, I have a bigger turn, so that's a higher variance play in to some extent. And then there's low variance, you know, I have KC, KC, scheme, scheme, scheme. My deck is very low variance. It's going to do the same thing every turn. You know, I have KC, 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 scheme, 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 and all this other stuff, whatever, right? And my deck is absolutely going to do the same thing every turn. Or my deck is super tiny that just with my duration draw or whatever every turn, I only have a 9-card deck and I have 4 wards and I'm playing 2 of them every turn. So I'm going to draw my deck every turn and there's no variance there. A lot of times when there's no variance, either it's just like you have this brilliant contraption set up to where it's like, you know, you have the KC scheme thing going on, or even in sometimes in those cases, when you have a brilliant contraption set up, you have a golden deck, right? You know, Bishop, gold, province, some fifth card that makes some money, and you can either Bishop a gold and score 4 points every turn, or you can Bishop the province and score 5 points every turn while lowering provinces. Right, that's some contraption where it's extremely low variance because it's you're absolutely doing the same thing every turn until a pile runs out. But in a lot of cases, and the golden deck may be good that I just described. There's other golden decks possible. In a lot of cases, though, going for something like this where it's absolutely safe and zero variance is not good because going for a little bit higher variance is going to give you a much bigger potential payoff. But there's always like a sliding scale. Not always. Almost always a sliding scale to where, you know, you have some increased payoff for going for higher variance. Actually, that's maybe not even usually true. It's sometimes true that the potential like average payoff is higher with higher variance. But you're more consistent with the lower variance thing. And yeah, here's where it's important to have a good metric that you're looking at. So, right, there are cases where adding a silver to my deck gets me from 16 money to 18 money, which is true, and in the abstract you might think that's good, But maybe we're to the point of the game where all that matters is double provincing, and adding the extra silver might make it less likely, because I'm more likely to have a dud, and that's more important than, you know, the extra silver, because the 16 to 18 maybe doesn't make a difference, really. 16 to 17, you know, I add a copper, usually I'm going to be able to draw it, but not always. So yeah, the extra payload of the extra copper is, if I look at my average money per turn, it's a good thing, but because it increases the chance that I dud, and, you know, the extra one money doesn't help me, the chance that I dud from going from 16 money to 17 money, maybe really, really tiny, right? It happens, you know, one out of every 200 hands or something. But, and so on average, I make more money by getting the copper, but it's still a super bad play because that money doesn't matter, right? So in the end, the metric that you really care about is win rate. I'm going back to this. And there is a variance in your win rate also. But your win rate as a metric is just from 0 to 100%. And it's a Bernoulli trial. And getting a little mathy here. Cool myself off by beating my shirt a bit. Getting a little bit mathy here. Your variance on a Bernoulli or binomial variable is maximized when you're at 50% win rate. Well, you're at 50%, which in this case, the variable we're measuring is win rate. So it's maximized to 50%. So increasing the variance in terms of win rate necessarily means that you're going closer to 50%. Increasing the variance on whatever other deck quality metric that you're talking about, or chances to do whatever, to dud, or to have your average payload on a turn, whatever other heuristic metric you're talking about, might increase the variance on your win rate, but it also might not increase the variance on your win rate. Those things, I think, from my experience, this is something I'm not sure of, but from my experience, it seems to me like generally when you're increasing the variance on those other things, you usually are also increasing the variance on the win rate, but that is not always the case, I don't think. Well, it's certainly not always the case. I think in general, there is some correlation between those things, but it's not, and it's probably a pretty good correlation too, but it's not a hard and fast thing, right? Now, because we're talking about win rates, and win rate, the variance is increased the closer you are to 50%, this should help you figure out, well, do I want to increase the variance or not? And the answer is, if you're behind, you do. If you're ahead, you don't. So, so that's what you want to keep in mind here. But I want to stress that for the most part, you should really just be thinking about what's good and what's bad. I think people too often make plays that are too risk-averse where they're ahead, especially too risk-averse where they're behind. But sometimes, sometimes they play too much of a risk when they're behind, if they're behind by not very much, because it's like turn one and I'm just player two, and that's all the far I am behind. Right, too early, where you're not behind by very much, if you play too much with this risk thing in mind, you end up just making one of those bad plays where, you know, I'm increasing my risk, but it's like the risk reward payoff is just a bigger deal than the I want to increase the variance thing, right? The effect of I'm going to make the game more random and closer to a 50-50 crapshoot is something which is usually, in the big majority of cases, smaller than just this is a better card for my deck or this is a better plan for me to take. Sometimes it comes into play when the decisions are really, really close. But for the most part, I think if people ignored that effect overall, I'm not even sure if they would lose percentage points or gain percentage points, because it's the kind of thing that people can easily overthink and think too much about. Well, I should be increasing the variance because I'm behind. Really, you should just mostly be making a good play. And, well, somewhat it depends on, like, the level of your opponent. You know, if your opponent is completely perfect player, then maybe you have to take more risks, but in general, I haven't met a player yet who is so good that you want to, you know, increase your risks against them like this versus just trying to play well. Right? One of the things from a long time ago that sometimes people would do is like, I'm going to get treasure maps really early because I'm not as good of a player again as Wandering Winder. And I'm like, well, you're really not that much bad of a worse of a player than me, except that sometimes you do things like opening treasure maps because you think like you need to make a risky play. And in reality, you're actually lowering your percentage against me, even if I might have been like 55% before, because 55 is a great percent to win, because I'm like just overall, I tend to make a little bit better decisions than you, say. When you decide that, well, I'm going to go for these early treasure maps, then it's just gravy to me. It actually increases my win rate, because this is one of the bad decisions that other people will make that let me win 55% of the time. Right, is they're going to make a bad decision because I need to make a risky play. And in most of the cases, that's just not something you want to do. First of all, you don't want to be scared of your opponent. But second of all, even if you're just like, you're scared of your position, doing something as radical as just like, I'm going to get treasure maps early and hope they collide, is usually just not where you want to be. Again, you can edge case me. Please leave them in the comments. But the big points I want to make here is still have a plan, understand how it affects whether you're actually winning or losing the game, as opposed to just, is it good or bad for me, right? The more I am ahead, the more I do want to be safe, because if I have a huge lead, then the way that I lose is by, you know, having a complete disaster happen to me. But there's different ways of being safe. We'll cover that in a later episode that I have planned. And the more I'm behind, the more I need to take the risk. Like we talked about last week, I can't be safe because I'm behind. But in general, you still just, especially early on, you want to make good plays. You want to measure risk versus reward. And you want to realize that not going for the quote-unquote risky thing usually entails some kind of an opportunity risk, an alternative risk where you can't get the good case. And you need to weigh the likelihood of the good versus bad cases versus the upside and downside of the good and bad cases. You can't just say, well, this is too risky, and just write it off without thinking about it, right? Maybe you think about it and the reward just simply isn't sufficient to cover the risk, and that's okay. I'm not saying never make that decision. But do think about, okay, there's risks on both sides. Which one of them leaves me in a better overall spot? Hopefully you've been able to make some use out of this. Hopefully it's helped you. And you can apply this thought of realizing the risks on both sides and helping you weigh what you want to do in your own games. We'll be back again soon with another episode of Making Luck. And this is WW signing off. I guess I should come up with the first and second law of riskiness too. I think the zeroth law is like some plays aren't risky, they're just bad. The first law could be what? An object at risk tends to stay at risk. A player seeking out risk tends to continue to a risk right now tends to be a risk in the future unless something changes to alleviate that situation. So like the risk of not defending yourself against an attack, that checks out. The risk of having open multiple terminals, that checks out. Okay, that's a good first law. What's a second law? F equals MA. So what would that be for Dominion, right? That's the amount of risk you take is directly proportional to your win rate. And I don't know. Somebody come up with it in the comments. I'm done.